Any questions or anything to share? You don't have to, but you're welcome.
Sorry.
You don't have to speak, but do you have something? You're welcome.
What is forgiveness?
Why are you asking?
Because sometimes people talk of it like an act. But I sort of feel it's more, it seems important, but I think there may be less effort involved. Like it might just be a letting go. And I've reached a point where there's, around that letting go, around someone who has been very challenging for me, there was a contraction. And I'm just wondering, I'm reluctant to forgive. What now?
Can you feel what the reluctance wants? Reluctance means like, I want to forgive and I don't want to forgive. I don't fully trust forgiveness.
Maybe there's a story there that seems important, that intellectually I know is probably not serving me, but there's an emotional core to it.
Can you hear what he's saying? An emotional core to the story, so even though he thinks maybe the story is not serving me, it's the story still stands. So then?
So then I asked you, what is forgiveness?
But if we stay with that situation you just described so clearly, we could then go into like, so then what is it that you want? Why do you want there to be forgiveness?
Because it was something that I couldn't solve, so I put it down.
Mm-hmm.
It was another thing I put down. But it's sort of just coming back and just niggling me.
Mm-hmm.
And I can keep putting it down, but it seems like something needs to be addressed, and then...
So what needs to be addressed?
Well, I'm not sure it changes my plan. I think I just need to feel through all the layers of it.
Feel through all the layers of what?
I'm not sure.
Of the hurt, or or more than that.
There's the anger, then the hurt. Sort of, I don't know, some sort of fear about letting it,
yeah,
it
good.
Go. Like, it's something that I've built a persona around, or
mm-hmm.
and I don't know what I'll be without it, or
so say again what the fear is by going to the fear, like feeling it if you can.
Oh, that's tricky. Right?
It's gone. Okay. So in your own time, from there something really can sprout. Another way is, what's another word, not forgiveness, that would, what if you just come back to the situation and forget what question you asked and how you've been thinking about it, but just, there's hurt on top of the hurt, some anger. You know that well, you've tried to put it down, it comes back. So your idea that you should put the story down is starting to get questioned. Maybe there's something in there that's not only story or that needs some other kind of attention than just putting down. And there's fear. And there's a wish for fill in the blank. Like, there's a movement towards something. And you're like, maybe forgiveness? But what's forgiveness again? So let's drop the word for a second. What's the movement? What's that situation calling for? You don't have to answer no, but maybe something comes up.
I think it is just sort of the letting go is the best I could.
There's a wish for letting go of what? Or a movement towards either invitation of letting go or a movement towards letting go of what? And again, it's not that you need to answer now, but maybe something pops up. It could be a week-long process.
Yeah. Oh, like that was the past.
Letting go of the past.
Yeah.
What does that mean? What would it be to be without the past?
I have no idea.
So then, I'm not saying you don't. There is a movement towards letting go of the past, and I don't know what it could be like to be without the past. What do you feel in your body now?
The wall, and there was maybe just a tinge of sadness.
Sadness.
Yeah.
Can you, from that little bit of sadness, say anything more about it? Sadness of what? And maybe you don't want to put it into words also.
Sense of loss.
Of what?
Loss of what?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Keep going. I don't mean you have to keep telling me, but keep going with that. And if we back up or something, and like, even though there's a wall and you're talking in front of other people, you could still feel this little tinge is like a tiny, if there would be white paint and a tiny bit of some other color, that, so you can just barely see it, of sadness. And then, okay, you really went inside and connected with something, and you managed to find also words for that. That's all amazing. Sadness of loss, okay. And don't push, but don't stop. Sadness of loss of what, and just wait. As you like. Maybe something connected. What happened? If you want to share, please do. Last summer, Damon and I moved really heavy rocks together, so it makes it easier to talk. One sec. Great. Yes, but that's, I think maybe just to say this word forgiveness, it's a good example, and maybe we can even let the whole, this session can be, have that title, forgiveness. Partly so that we can feel and hear the danger of, for example, thinking that we know what it is, and how if he thought he knew what it was and just stopped with that, how that would go, what that would be like. And if we just keep coming back to the experience and feel the several branches or streams, things can really be fertile. The river can really feed the land. There's some good and helpful ideas about forgiveness and practices of forgiveness. And that can be relatively useful. But if we think that's all, and we stop with that, I've got my kind of answer, then I think a really powerful process gets kind of shoved underground. So, yes, Dolores, please. Sorry to stop you.
Myself, but in the future, and possible future things where each time I realize that I notice that I'm really strong or I'm making some really strong decisions. But I'm wondering if this is something that's like more like human nature for us always to be thinking ahead, or if it's something I'm really trying to be in the now. And then like a little dispute in my mind and my body, because I keep catching myself being one step ahead of myself. I don't know if it's something, it's conditioning us.
It sounds like it might be a few layers. But I want to ask you first, how, when you catch yourself in your mind's eye making a strong decision or being strong, is there a feeling of resonating with that? Or does it feel like just an image that's distant or paper or something?
Yeah, I notice that it feels really in my upper body. So it's really strange, but if I'm sitting, then my hips, my hands, my legs, they all feel very settled and very here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in my chest. I keep catching myself, like, forward thinking. And I don't know, maybe it's, I'm projecting it's how I want to be, because I feel quite vulnerable now.
Okay.
I don't know if it's something everybody does, or it's just me.
We could say nobody does, not even you, because it's not like you're there sort of writing the script. It's happening, and each of us has a different kind of happening that's habitual. Some people might be more past, some people might be more future, some people might be just more that other planet out there, etc. So for now, today, you're noticing future, and you're noticing that it goes with some particular sensations in the upper body. And you're not sure if the fact that there's a contrast between how you see yourself now and what you see yourself there, if that's your wanting or some other kind of happening. And I think that in a way, when we know that we can be free of the habitual mind, then we can step back and see how beautiful the mind is, even when it's kind of misbehaving. That it can be, there's so much that interweaves. I'll just give a small example. On the last retreat I taught in Finland, there was someone came, maybe fairly experienced meditator. I didn't know her before. It was her first retreat with me. And she said, "I just have one question. Yesterday, all day long, I had these songs in my head, three of them, and they were just driving me crazy, and I tried everything I knew with them. It went into the night, and nothing that I knew worked. Do you have any tips?" And so, partly because I didn't know her so well, we hadn't moved rocks together last summer, we started with, okay, well, maybe there's some tips. And then it was like, just curious, because sometimes the songs that come that seem to be bothering us, I'm just curious, what were the lyrics? What were the words of the song? Because sometimes the words of the song are just so very relevant. It's like this weird way that some deeper wisdom found this old recording of the old song from 1981 or whatever and found a speaker to get to our conscious mind. And she was like, no, that couldn't be. And then she was like, well, just one second, let me go through the... And each one covered the three major, huge areas of struggle that she was having in her psyche, exactly. So one example was, though she's not just barely grown and out of the home, but long out of her home, she still feels some kind of... guilt towards her father if she would just spend her money and go away to India, for example, to do retreats for a long time. And there was a song about a young woman who's happily saying from across the world, this is in Finnish, so I won't sing it for you, from across the world saying happily to her father, "I'm doing really well, I'm happy, I'm fine, don't worry." So the song had come, there was no recognition that it was had any relevance, it was just bothering her. The song was bothering her, it wouldn't let her go. So sometimes the mind is bothering us, it is in a habit pattern, and it might not be 100% disconnected from wisdom. So maybe leaving it open about the image of yourself strong. And maybe it could be feeling in further in the what happens in your upper body when you notice future thinking. First of all, that the kind of celebration, I call it like the hallelujah moment, where you realize something in you realizes you've been thinking about the future. So who is that? Or what is that? It seems like a, just a, not a big deal, but it's a big deal. It's a really simple big deal that happens many times a day to all of us. We're busy thinking we're completely caught up as far as we know in our programming, and something somehow realizes I'm caught up in my programming. What is that? So I'm not saying tell me what that is, but just noticing that that is. So that when we catch ourselves, there's not as much a tendency to be kind of like, you bad girl, you were caught in the thinking. Like, who am I? That was caught and this caught. And maybe with time, there's a chance to feel the habitual forward stance, and whether that's connected maybe to some sort of learned defense or alarm, trying too hard or something. And if there's also some, you know, maybe even revisiting the image of yourself strong that came, in case it was like those songs that came to this other woman. Maybe it really came from some other part of us. And without it being a future thinking, but it being like a now feeling, how is that now to resonate with that image of me strong, of me having a strong decision just come? And me, how does that go down into the lower body? It could be that even beforehand you actually are standing somewhere, your chosen spot in the forest, and you really get into your feet and your legs, and then you get really into your pelvic bowl, and then you let the top of the body be free on top of that, like the sea plant on top of that. And then you invite that image of you strong, making a strong decision, just to play with it once. It could be worthwhile. The main thing would be not to assume that something's wrong, not to assume that something's right also. And then, yes, everybody's got their habits going on in their mind, sometimes future, sometimes this way, that way, that way, that way, that way. Yeah. What comes to mind now, anything?
Why, but the more I was thinking to get it back, but to get it back in a, with an observation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm trying to not let it irritate me.
Yeah. And also, I love how the phrase you use, that you had been toying with that idea before. So that flavor of where we're toying with an idea, but we don't kind of believe that we could actually do that. That's the kind of flavor of the inner voice or the inner direction, that leadership that's worth following, is that the mind sort of toys with that idea, but we wouldn't, until someone gives me permission to do it, or in the text it says, when you have an image of yourself strong, then go back to that image, having gotten into your legs. You know, we think we have to have confirmation. And so a main practice is feeling for where the mind is toying with an idea, but we wouldn't quite address it or quite go into it. It could be years. And if we get into the flow of going with what the mind is toying with in that way, just now, it could be 3 seconds or 30 seconds. And you've tried it one time. And then from there, the next experiment may come. It's not a hurry, but it really unloads our system a lot. There's not things piling up waiting for years. But it takes us time to be able to catch that flavor of the mind. I was toying with that. Exactly, that's a great phrase for it. Anything else? Anything else coming up to say or ask? Did anything pop up from yesterday's questions and potential experiments? Experience as a flow that, for example, from the very first evening, body, sounds, and actually everything in our experience as being just now, so that whatever statement I could make about it isn't about what it is, it's about what it was. And that gravitating into what it is. That was one thing. And then being in the flow with the example of sports. And especially how being in the flow in that way, being in the zone, so to say, music, walking meditation, whatever, isn't just that it happens to be an easy scenario where there's no obstacle, no problem. Being in the flow includes obstacle. And again, with the example of sports, if there were no obstacle, there is no sport. It's having a flow in the presence of obstacles, but without getting so focused on obstacleness. So that kind of being in the flow, which could, and I suggested maybe we could check how the sense experience changes when we're in the zone, in the flow. Even if it's for half a second, because often we're in the flow and then the colors get really vivid and then we're all excited, like, oh, I'm about to be enlightened. And then, of course, we're not. We're about to be human, maybe. We're about to give some room to ourselves as we are. Or we just did. It just happened. And then if maybe we could be, over our lifetime as we get more and more enriched, if we could be played or used in some way that would be bigger than our lifetime, by what would we be played or used? What has the capacity? What is the layer of our experience that goes beyond birth and death? And then we also had the word love and service. What is that? And we talked a lot about, that I added to the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's list of love and service as being possibly what matters, or what we won't regret at the end of our lives. We won't regret love and service at the end of our lives. That readiness to follow the good lead. So being able to sniff out what's the leadership that's worthy of following and ready to follow that. That's the inquiry or vichar, that being willing to be in a transformation ongoingly. And then realizing that one key element is that there is openness. And so we become guardians of openness so that something fresh emerges. so that I'm in touch with what's fresh, so something fresh emerges. So that I'm not just in touch with what I expect or remember. And that is what that's how I'm describing abhyas, which is usually called practice. And then we just don't have any bandwidth left for measuring myself, how I'm doing. If I'm doing well in meditation, then I feel happy about myself. If my interpretation of my meditation is I'm not doing well, then I'm low. We get off of that wagon, whatever. It's not that we necessarily notice we're on the wagon and find a door and step down. It starts to tune out because, first of all, it's painful, uninteresting, and untrue. So often, the way that what we're using, our interpretation, that we're basing our judgment and valuing on, is so completely wrong. When we think we had a good meditation, we were just so involved in ourselves. When we thought we had a terrible meditation, we were really letting ourselves grow. We had the expectation that growing would be like the lotus opened into the dewy dawn. Maybe the lotus opening into the dewy dawn is incredibly painful for the lotus, we don't know. Or for the dew, or whatever. And then the really cool way that willingness to feel for what's a good lead to follow, and following that lead, guarding the openness, dropping our interest in valuing myself by my problems, by my ups and downs. We find that not only from the openness can we more easily feel our direct experience, that streaming of life, that sense that we really recognize it's unexpected each time and it's not happening again. Not only that, but a quality of meeting happens that is further transformative. So there's openness, so things are much more shifty, they're willing to be shifted. And then there's this meeting quality that can happen within ourselves, with other people, with objects. It's not discriminatory. There's not a prejudice against rocks or sky or humble people who aren't wearing orange robes or whatever. And so that possibility of direct contact or perception of aliveness that also allows us to resonate in a way that either makes us in touch with a way that we're way bigger than we thought, or maybe it actually makes us bigger. There's no way to know. So just out of all of that, is there anything to say just now, digested, undigested? So before I read to you some words from one of my favorite people, the question that comes to me for today is around what would make an experience sacred. And I don't mean sacred in any kind of technical way. But if we can use the word that loosely, what would make an experience sacred? So what would make a footstep on the earth sacred? The experience feel sacred to you? And then what does that feel like? What helps that come about? And then what is that happening? What are the qualities of it? Does that make sense as a question? Yeah, no?
Other world, the world sacred.
Okay, what is sacred in Hebrew? That's true, I didn't. There must be a. Yeah? Did you hear? Yeah. So I'm wondering in Hebrew if it's. Do you use that word also in a non-religious context? In it just common, it could just be in a book about cooking. No. Okay. So then, not that word.
Value you can use.
Okay, so if anyone wants now, we could still leave it open, but if anyone wants now to give any information from your experience of you were cooking and it was sacred, or walking or making love or swimming or whatever. It could just be for a flash, or it could be that there was a day or a month or whatever.
Well, I know that sometimes, very often, when I cook, I don't know what I'm going to do. I was just thinking about when talking about being in the flow. It's a dinner, people are coming over, and I get all the ingredients, and I don't really know, but it somehow happens. And I keep trying something or the other. I mean, it's never the same. So somebody mm-hmm. asks me, well, how did you make this? I can tell them that day, but I can't say it a week later.
Mm-hmm.
So cooking is a bit like that in terms of, I don't know if it's that means sacred, but it has that quality.
How does
it
feel?
Gives anxiety
to
you? Also.
It gives sometimes. Anxiety, okay. And what else?
Sometimes joy,
mm-hmm.
because you suddenly created something very nice.
Yeah.
Sometimes things come out terrible and then you have to save it and do something to cover up.
Okay, so when it brings joy, can you tell me more, tell us more about that? It comes out well and you feel joy. Is it just because you feel, I did it, even though you didn't really because you didn't know what you were doing?
It's just exciting to serve people something new.
Yeah. And is it purely about the fact that it's new, like a novelty? Is it the novelty, or is there some other thing going on? So novelty would be like, is it just the fact that no one ever had this ever before on planet Earth? Just that?
I don't know. I haven't thought about it. It's just a sense of satisfaction, well-being,
yeah.
Something nice. I mean, it doesn't have a grandiose thing
no.
But mm-hmm. it has more in terms of, maybe with friends, it's like, it's the excitement of offering something nice and watching them taste it and enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
So there is something very exciting about
yeah.
seeing that,
yeah.
of hearing people appreciate.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think it can be, I'm interested in that difference between what I think you're mostly talking about, which is in a way, bringing your party into the freshness of the present moment, because they're tasting something they haven't mm-hmm. tasted, and they wow, so they're in a state of wonder in something totally simple and among friends. The difference between that, like bringing a group into the present moment or deeper than the present moment. They're almost out of time for a second, so to say. And then with the Not like, oh yeah, this is that, I've tasted that before. The difference between that and our excitement, we can use the same words, but it's a really different experience, I think. Excitement about, in a way, the idea of something new, the idea of newness. And that could be interesting to feel into when it's anxiety and when it's joy, if the anxiety is that me thinking I need to make something now really different that will make them excited too. Mm-hmm. And how, just feeling in the body, like Dolores was also describing, like what's the...
Yeah.
So I think I would like to, for now, leave that question about sacred, except I want to give in language some other way to go into it other than the religious word. So there could be a feeling quality in opening a water bottle or even picking it up and just opening it. And a lot of that, so wonderful description of not, I've got the ingredients, but I don't know what's going to come out. So we've got the ingredients. But some kind of understanding, acceptance, deep recognition that I don't fully know. So I'm not relating to my memory and idea of this water bottle, which, as you can see, has been around for maybe 15 years or so. And when that's allowed, that there's a space to be with the water bottle, which then infects my hand also. The not knowing exactly what it is or not relating to what I think it is. My hand, my arm, myself, the unknownness, and yet in direct contact. So when the meal is at 8 or whatever, we need to have the food ready. There's a certain, we're in, we're not la la la. I'm just drinking water, and wow. So maybe I would describe as a kind of heartfelt space that is spacious and contained somehow. That sometimes happens. So if you're interested in just feeling into what might, on the practical level in you, allow that sense of sacred. And then what's the difference when that happens? What's the difference in your experience?
Can I ask something?
Please.
Why did you say contained as well?
We could use the word presence. So there's not a sense of necessarily limit, but it's almost like, if for me, being in a forest, there's some shapes that enhance my receptivity to a sense of sacredness that's similar to, for some people, in certain buildings that have been made to be like a forest, like a cathedral, for example. That shape gives a feeling of bigger than the shape, non-limit, and okay, and here, and not desolate, not alone, maybe alone and not alone. It's not a blank. There's some kind of presence that gives the taste of limitlessness. And so if we go into this word resonance now, which is related to all the questions that are still open, so we got 5 or 6 card games going on. The card that kind of could be played now in any of those games could be this word resonance or this experience of resonance, where resonance happens, for example, in a drum. So there's space and there's the containing of the space. And the containing of the space is willing to be infected by the spaciousness in a particular way. So if we hear something and we resonate with it, or we see something and we resonate with it, or we think something and we resonate with it, just keeping that as a really simple practical, so we're not, it's not abstract what we're talking about. You hear a song and you resonate with it. I'd like to ask us to feel if there may be 2 kinds of resonating, though. So not just to assume, oh, I really resonate with that, so that must be true. So just like there could be 2 kinds of excitement. One is when I think I did a good job and therefore I have permission to feel okay. And one is when it wasn't me and I was happy to go along and the food came out well or didn't, but we ate it and we're friends still. And it deepens the friendship. Whether the food came out well or not, it deepens the friendship. Today I was reading a dialogue or trialogue or something with Krishnamurti and some students. And he was really asking them to be so careful. He's saying it's so dangerous. So dangerous that we'll so easily think that what someone's saying is true. We'll so easily think that what I think is true. It's pages and pages where he kept saying yes, but it's such a danger if you think that because it's logical, or it's so dangerous if you think because it's illogical. It's so dangerous if you think because it intuitively feels right. Or you've listened to the person for 20 years and it's still so dangerous. He kept it over and over again. And so he keeps asking the people, the questioners, how are you going to know if it's true? How are you going to know? I test it with my own experience and also I notice that it makes sense, but how are you going to know? How are you going to know? It's so dangerous, he says again and again. And just to say that so clearly, what he means by what's dangerous, so easily we fool ourselves. So easily we deceive ourselves. And so easily we're unwilling to notice the deception like covering up. So for example, following a little bit on from what Damanji was saying, there's different ways that we're all broken. There's this kind of relatively small personal ways that we're broken, and there's also this kind of fundamental break. Fundamental, like really down there. and this covering up of that, which is our personality, and then our loyalty to our personality. And it's so easy to feel scared to question that cover-up, to go outside the personality. Not to be against it, but just to be free to be beyond a little bit over here sometimes. To be uncomfortable, in other words. Or sometimes to feel that much ease, that you don't have to squeeze into that little suit. So sometimes, even though there's covering up and not wanting to see the cover up and being broken and wanting to be all interested in the brokenness so I don't have to deal with anything else it's bigger than that, or because I can't figure it out, or it's not fair. And definitely not wanting to go anywhere near that deeper, like, bone brokenness down there. Some kind of big break. That we think it's only mine. Nobody else is dealing with that, we think. We assume. We tell each other.
Tanya, can you say more about that?
And I need to keep going with this before I can come back to something. If I can, I'm just waiting for the words. And then catch me. Somewhere really deep down, we can keep uncovering our deep willingness to be honest, to feel just now that the whole personality is an N-O. That's all it is. And that's not all there is. So we've invested so much in. We've been asked to invest everything in our personality. Somewhere deep down, we know that doesn't sort of get anywhere where we want to go. It doesn't go where we want to go. It goes where we don't want to go. Further isolation, further twisting, further out of touch with what we actually enjoy and love. More and more impossible. But also, it's not just sort of that news that the personality is simply against. It's just a big against-ness. If we can kind of bear that or stay with that, stay there, maybe, in other words, who I think I am, has all been against life, against that innocent love that Janine mentioned yesterday, against actually what's natural. Just staying there and bearing that possibility. We start to find that there is so much room. Maybe the breath even changes and we find the breath way deep down, like able to enjoy. Enjoying. Enjoying beauty. Enjoying even intensity. Which means that deeper down than any break, any brokenness, there's a completeness. There's something that's already got its fingers in touch. Inseparably. So when we realize that we've been putting everything fruitlessly into, for example, trying to make sure I forgive that person and and kind of just pretending, not noticing that it's not happening. Maybe for about a year I pretended to, and that was good enough for me for a while, and then no, it's just not happening. It comes in the dreams, or it comes in the conversation accidentally, or it comes here and there. It's not that forgiveness doesn't happen, but it hasn't been happening. So at this point, it's easier to kind of look around and learn from everybody's experience. Not only at my own experience, we can learn from everybody's experience. It's really out in the open right now. What doesn't work? And we could be stopped, like breath stopped by that. That would be important, to let it get your attention, that it hasn't worked. It doesn't mean forgiveness is impossible, but forgiveness hasn't happened. It hasn't happened. And we can just feel the fact forgiveness hasn't happened. We can feel the welling up of history repeating itself. It's going to. Without forgiveness, it's going to. And we can feel it welling up. So when we have that sort of just why not-ness, so if it's dangerous, let us know it's dangerous. Living according to our programming is dangerous too. It's dangerous how easily we might believe something untrue just because someone said it and they looked nice and they were charming and whatever. Or they looked really severe and that convinced us. It's not too late that we could just feel that violence is welling up, and we could just feel how easily and intelligently we could allow something else to be cooked in the kitchen. Same ingredients. Along the way, one of the most important, maybe we can call it practices, is called not freaking out. And so that would be when I notice, that I'm operating as if all I've got is my personality, and no wonder it feels cramped and lonely and not enough, because that's not all that there is. That's not all that I am, even. And it's not all that this is in touch with. When we notice that we're cramped for a reason. When we notice we can't quite breathe, it's for a reason. That's giving us good information that we could just go the other way. Amoeba-like, that's cramped, let's go this way. And who knows what may happen? We know what may happen if we keep going along. Who knows what may happen in the kitchen? And so what Krishnamurti said at one point, I found it to be quite a rare sentence of his. Usually he really explains things in at length. And there's this one part of his dialogue in this case where he gives a more suggestive kind of, more impressionistic kind of response. He said, okay, we're so easily going to believe what's not true and spend our lives on that. Because we're not quite in touch with how precious our lives are. So knowing that it's dangerous to try to find out what's important or what's true, okay, it's dangerous, let's go. The recognition of danger all around, danger of just living by the programming I already have, danger of taking on a different programming and living by that. Okay, so it's dangerous. And then he keeps asking, what is going to be a way to know what's true? His word is true. We might say, not even important, but what is it going to be that at the end of your life, there's no regret? What is that going to be? What is that now? What's the taste? And so then Krishnamurti said, you know, like when you go on a walk in the mountains and you sit somewhere quietly, and then when you go home, things at home have changed. That's what he said. And then he said, do you follow me? He's saying more than what it sounds like he's saying. He's saying something a little bit weird. That we seem to go away from home when at home something needs to be attended to. We go away into the mountain where our feet go, and we're there and we get quiet. Quietness comes. And by the time we get home, things have changed at home. So when we've talked in the last 2 days about putting down a problem or accepting failure, realizing we've been going in a direction that isn't helping, and we stop and we just bear that, we just stay there with not knowing. But we stay in touch with the ingredients. And then another way. Something else happens. And it's not that I then have to do all the cooking. That's what forgiveness is. Anetaji, what's your question again, please?
I think you answered it.
Okay. So maybe I would like just to read a tiny bit of the words of Jacques Lucéron, just to hear it and let it be with us, if I can possibly read in the dark. Maybe I can't. Anyone have a light? Thank you. So I'd like to just read this. Some of you know a little bit about Jacques Lucéron because I love him so much. It's not that I met him, although it turns out that he was the professor of a good friend's sister. I found out later, but he's gone now. So he says, my ears were hearing no better, but I was making better use of them. I needed to hear and hear again. I multiplied sounds to my heart's content. I rang bells. I touched walls with my fingers, explored the resonance of doors, furniture, and the trunks of trees. I sang in empty rooms. I threw pebbles far off on the beach just to hear them whistle through the air and then fall. I even made my small companions repeat words to give me plenty of time to walk around them. So he's describing a time when he was 8 years old. That's why he has small companions. It's not like the Oompa Loompas or something. But most surprising of all was the discovery that sounds never came from one point in space and never retreated into themselves. So he's saying, and it is surprising, so I'll just read it again. Most surprising of all, he's doing all this experimentation with sound. Most surprising of all was the discovery that sounds never came from one point in space. So he's saying something that we don't believe. He's saying, in his experience, sound didn't come from where that bird is and then kind of go back there or pass in one unidirection. And they never retreated into themselves. There was the sound, its echo, and another sound into which the first sound melted and to which it had given birth. Altogether, an endless procession of sounds. So he's actually just talking about literally hearing. He's not talking about, though it sounds like he is, a spiritual experience. He is finding some of the deepest truths in some of the simplest experiences. And it was through a willingness and a training of his hearing. So the ears were the same, the sounds were the same. His receptivity and interest in the sounds was different. And his experience of them was completely different. His assumptions about sounds that we still have, he found to be wrong. And so I hope that we'll go more into hearing about his experience maybe tomorrow. But I would like to close with a very short poem by Kathleen Rain. Thanks to Caroline for gifting the book. As well as a suggestion for anyone who wants to play with a way of practicing walking meditation. Just really simply, maybe starting with going a little bit slowly. It doesn't have to be too slowly, but as if you're walking in water that maybe comes up just below your knee. That each time you put a foot down, it's as if your step into the water makes those circular ripples go out. And as you lift the foot also, as if we're, sometimes that can be an actual experience, but we could encourage ourselves to experience differently by using the imagination in this way. We have science on our side in opening to experience a wave-like quality of body and world that is continuous, non-separate. So this is a three-line poem with, or maybe we could say a four-line poem. The first word and first line is world. And she just has it on the page, world, and then the 2 points that we call colon in American English anyway, but world. So it's like a title, it's part of the poem. World, image on water, waves break, and it is gone, yet it was. world, image on water, waves, break, and it is gone. Yet, it was. Any question? Anything to share? Thank you for listening. May our practice and our lives be devoted to cooking up freedom for all.